Hello and welcome to Four Corners, a closer look at one of the stories shaping your world. I'm Shahab Mossavat at Press TV Centre in Tehran. Nuclear energy, not nuclear weapons. That has been Iran's stated position. And now the least likely of sources, the National Intelligence Estimate, speaking in the convoluted language unique to that community, appears to be saying much the same. Of course, they do so with provisos and equivocations, and among the moderate confidences and significant progresses, they also continue to allege that Iran could pursue and complete weapon-grade enrichment by 2010. However, the alarmist rhetoric President Bush has used in recent months, particularly that World War III was imminent upon Iran's acquisition of nuclear weapons, seems overhyped and overblown. Responding to the news, Iran's Foreign Minister Manoucher Mottaki was cautious but welcomed the change of tack. It's natural that we welcome it when those countries who in the past have questions and ambiguities about this case now amend their views realistically, he said. The United Nations Authority, charged with overseeing the Iranian nuclear case, the IAEA, was also swift in its positive reaction. It said the report vindicated its findings that no evidence of an illicit weapons program has been found. In the United States, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid called for a change in strategy, indicating he favored a thaw in relations with Iran. Mr. Reid called for a diplomatic surge and said he had asked for the preparation of the report as a means to circumscribe another propaganda campaign against Iran, similar to the one that preceded the invasion of Iraq.
The NIE, I asked for this. I asked for it because I did not want another run-up that the president proved he was very good at doing, beginning the Iraq War. I mean, we go back in our mind's eye and see, as I've said before, the clincher for me was Colin Powell before the United Nations with little pictures and stuff. Yeah, we've got a truck here with biological weapons and all this. They're pretty good at running the country up into a war. I wanted to make sure that we didn't do the same. That's why I asked for this NIE.
However, White House spokesman Stephen Hadley, while not pouring scorn on the report's findings, made every attempt to spin the story as proving the case for sanctions and diplomatic pressure. He said the U.S. was right to be worried and that President Bush had the right strategy.
The estimate offers grounds for hope that the problem can be solved diplomatically without the use of force, as the administration has been trying to do. And it suggests we have the right strategy. Intensified international pressure, along with a willingness to negotiate a solution that serves Iranian interests while ensuring the world that it will never have to face a nuclear-armed Iran.
Meanwhile, Israel continues to lead the case for an armed intervention. Its Defense Minister Ehud Barak, a longtime hawk, told Radio Israel that while Iran had in 2003 halted for a certain period of time its military nuclear program, as far as he knew, it has probably since renewed it. However, when challenged to produce sources to back up this assertion, Mr. Barak refused. The timing of the report is crucial, coming at a time when Iran faces a third set of United Nations sanctions. Despite a reasonably favorable evaluation by the IAEA, the European Union Foreign Affairs Chief, Javier Solana, has declared himself dissatisfied with the Iranians, following a meeting between Mr. Solana and Iran's chief nuclear negotiator, Saeed Jalili, last Friday. Mr. Solana said he was disappointed with the progress and declared the talks had failed. So,
I have to admit that after 5 hours of meetings, I expected more, and therefore I am disappointed. We will be in telephonic contact probably before the end of the month of December, and if the circumstances permit, we will meet, but that will be agreed later on.
So, will these new circumstances produce a completely new context? Will a détente or even a rapprochement follow? Or will further sanctions be imposed and diplomatic pressure be presented as the mechanism by which Iran has been brought to heel? Joining me on Four Corners tonight is Kazem Gharib Abadi. Mr. Gharib Abadi is an advisor to the foreign minister and has previously been a member of Iran's nuclear negotiating team. He joins me from Tehran. He is also an academic and author in the fields of international security and disarmament. We also have Kate Hudson, who is the chair of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, a long-established and respected pressure group who is in our London studio. I'm also hoping to be joined by Kevin Saunders, who is CNN's former science correspondent. He joins us from New York. If I can start with you, Mr. Gharib Abadi, the National Intelligence Estimate is not a document that can be easily dismissed, but its findings were used as the basis for making war against Iraq. What does Iran's government make of its latest findings about Iran's nuclear program?
Okay. This is for the first time that the intelligence community of the USA goes back from its earlier positions regarding the Iranian nuclear program or activities. Before this report, the intelligence community had an estimate on Iran's nuclear program at 2005. In 2005, the intelligence community, they declared that Iran is pursuing the capability and acquiring the nuclear weapons. So in 2005, I mean in the recent report of the intelligence community of the USA, they declared that Iran is not pursuing the nuclear weapon program currently, and Iran has altered the nuclear weapon program in 2003.
Mr. Gharib Abadi, the IAEA actually said that they have found no evidence that Iran was carrying out a nuclear weapons program, but what you're saying is that Iran isn't carrying out a nuclear weapons program. Can you tell me why it is that Iran has always maintained that position?
So this is the principal position of the Islamic Republic of Iran from the legal and also from the religious points of view. All the Iranian officials, I mean from the leadership to the president and also to the Minister of Foreign Affairs have declared that the WMD weapons of mass destruction have no place in the Islamic Republic of Iran, the defense doctrine or security doctrine. So this is our principal position. We acted according to our obligations. We are a member of the NPT. We are committed not to pursue the weapons of mass destruction, I mean the nuclear weapons. So we are acting according to our obligations. So this is so clear that why Iran rejects all the allegations and the challenges that some certain countries are raising against or vis-a-vis its peaceful nuclear activities.
Fair enough. Okay, I want to turn to Kevin Saunders. Kevin Saunders, very welcome to Four Corners. Former science spokesman, correspondent for CNN. I want to ask you a scientific question, in principle. Iran says it has about 3,000 centrifuges carrying out enrichment. Is that quite enough to undertake a serious weapons grade enrichment program?
In time, yes. But I think the broader perspective in which I think it's important to view this is that it was determined at the last Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Review Conference at the United Nations in 2005, one of the panels addressing the kind of questions that you've just asked concluded that there were right now in the world 26 countries which, if they wished to, if they decided to, if there were political will, could have a nuclear weapon within 6 months. You know, and they're talking about countries like New Zealand, Canada, Norway, and 26 countries in the world which had the know-how, the skill, the equipment, and access to the necessary ingredients, either the uranium, plutonium, whatever. to actually produce a single nuclear bomb within 6 months.
So why in your estimate, Mr. Saunders, is Iran the one that's being singled out? I think you were going there anyway, but please carry on.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it is very arbitrary and indeed irrational in a way when George Bush talks about World War III the implication with the possibility of use of nuclear weapons. It is interesting that he's probably right, but for reasons other than he intended. Probably the country that is most equipped to start a nuclear war in the world is the United States. Here is a country that has more than 10,000 nuclear weapons, and it's estimated that 2,000 of them right now, this moment, are set on hair trigger alert. And so the possibility of a nuclear war by accident at any time is there. And the nature of the Middle East, the most strategically important part of the world, and a part of the world in which one of the nations, although it doesn't admit it, has up to, according to some estimates, as many as 400 nuclear weapons already. Whether they're on hair trigger alert or not, we do not know, because Israel doesn't even admit to having nuclear
Fair
weapons.
Enough.
But everybody knows they do. So in that situation, to deliberately choose a nation that doesn't even have a nuclear bomb, and to say this is the threat, is irrational, and obviously the reasons are geopolitical. They have nothing to do with science.
Kate Hudson, are you able to hear me now in London?
I am, yes, thank you.
Good, welcome to Four Corners. Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. I'd like to tell everybody here I was a member once myself, so more power to you. I think you do an excellent job.
Thank you.
Just wanted to find out what the principal position of the CND is now. Are they still saying that nuclear weapons no, nuclear power no?
We are, yes. We have a position against both nuclear weapons and nuclear power. However, we do recognize that there is a distinction between those two things in terms of international law. Of course, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty caters for both of those things. Under the NPT, countries are required to disarm their nuclear weapons, that's including the nuclear weapons states. Countries without them are required not to pursue them. That is a fact of international law which we absolutely support.
But Kate Hudson, many pressure groups, including Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, not Greenpeace, but Friends of the Earth certainly, and many others of that ilk, have come forward and have said, people like Jonathan Porritt have come forward and said, we're not quite so sure about the nuclear energy case anymore because of all the environmental concerns there are about burning hydrocarbons, fossil fuels. Now,
well,
I do understand
let
you're
me,
in the...
Let,
yes, please.
Let me be absolutely clear about this. CND is absolutely opposed to nuclear power. I was going to make the point that whilst we are opposed to it, we do recognise that under the NPT and international law it is legal to pursue nuclear power, but we make every attempt to persuade people not to pursue it. We believe that the argument that nuclear power is the answer to climate change is a complete red herring. It's not the answer to climate change. And if you look at the case of Britain, we currently have in the region of 12 or 15 nuclear power stations. Those nuclear power stations provide 4% of our total energy needs. So even if you doubled the number of nuclear power stations we have, you would only provide 8% of our energy needs.
Fair enough.
It takes 15 years to build a new nuclear power station.
Well,
even if you disregarded all the problems associated with nuclear waste, pollution, all those types of things, it would still be too little too late.
Allow me to ask our Iranian nuclear negotiator what he makes of that. Kazem Ghebawadi. What do you make of that? The fact that nuclear power doesn't really seem to be such an effectual answer to energy requirements. Why is it that Iran is sticking so much to the idea that nuclear power is an answer for its future?
Yes. I think we have to make a clear distinction between nuclear disarmament and using the nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. You know that the nuclear energy is the most cleanest of energy among the other energies, and also is environment friendly. So a country like Iran that is dependent on its fossil fuel, for example, like petroleum, like gas to produce electricity, these are produces many hazardous gases, you know, for example, and also these reserves, I mean the fossil fuel reserves, are not lasting forever. They will finish in a definite time in the future. So we have to consider the alternative energies for producing the electricity. Among other alternatives, the nuclear energy is the best option for Islamic Republic of Iran, not only for Iran. I think it is the best option for all the countries that they want to have an assured electricity supplying or fuel supplying for the electricity.
So is Iran's motivation for wanting to enrich its own uranium to do with the fact that they want to have energy security?
One of the reasons is the security of our energy in the future, and also for now, at the present, I mean. The other reasons, for example, now, according to the law that was approved in the parliament of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran has to produce more than 20,000 megawatts of nuclear electricity by 2025. So this is the strategic nuclear program for Iran to pursue this program. So because of this, we have to have our native and national producing the nuclear fuel. You know, we cannot rely on the mechanisms that are available now in the international arena. Let's be frankly, there is no international or assured mechanisms regarding the nuclear fuel.
But Mr. Arab,
because I disagree with that.
Well, go ahead, please, Kate Hudson. You think there is?
Well, I absolutely agree that it's necessary to diversify away from fossil fuels, and I quite understand your guest's concern, and I know that many countries, including Iran, are going
and
to have
UK.
Increasing energy needs, and the UK. All countries will have, particularly industrializing countries, developing countries around the world, will have a great need for increased energy. However, there are alternative forms of energy that are not being mentioned. Sustainable forms of energy, things like wind and wave power, which are available to some countries, of course, other forms of hydroelectricity, solar power, biofuels. There's a very wide number of very wide range of alternative sustainable forms of energy. And I'm sorry to say it is not true through my understanding. It's a misunderstanding to say that nuclear power is clean. The whole process of the production of nuclear power, which includes uranium mining, which is an incredibly toxic process.
Well,
there are emissions associated with nuclear power.
Let's ask Kevin Saunders. Kevin Saunders, nuclear energy, clean, cleaner or dirty?
Dirty and uniquely dirty, uniquely filthy. In the very long term, uniquely among all the energy sources, it produces wastes for which there is no known way of disposal. And someone said that any generation that leaves to future generations the storage of their nuclear wastes
but Mr. Saunders,
history.
Mr. Saunders, with respect to the contingent need today, one in which global warming is taking place, and estimates are placed anywhere between 2.5 and 5 degrees rise in the global temperature over the next 40 or 50 years, nuclear seems to offer a solution that doesn't have those emissions. I do understand your point about the dumping of the spent fuel rods
It does have emissions.
So yeah. Why is it that people as respected as Mr. Porritt have been making the case that he hasn't backed it, but he said it's certainly worth a look at, and Gordon Brown is certainly going down that path right now.
Yes, it's very much the case that that's being pursued here. In fact, up until about 3 or 4 years ago, our government had actually decided not to pursue new build nuclear power stations, and when the current number of nuclear power stations had reached the end of their shelf lives, we weren't going to actually replace them with new nuclear power stations. Just in the last few years, there's been an incredible trend, very much pursued and pressed by the nuclear industry, towards packaging nuclear power as the kind of clean, cheap, safe alternative to fossil fuels. And in my understanding, the evidence shows that that is not the case. All those other types of sustainable energy forms can be developed much more quickly than the building of new nuclear power stations. And I very much agree with your guest from the United States. Well, we will be poisoning the planet for future generations.
Yes, go ahead, please.
That's right.
Renewable energy, I'm not an expert in this regard, but as far as I know, that sometimes I had some studying in this regard. So the renewable energies for producing these energies, it costs a lot. But you know, we have a big agency, it is IAEA. One of its main functions is, for example, to accelerate and to facilitate the using of nuclear energy. So they are all specialists in this regard. They are aware of the consequences of this energy. So with now all of these consequences, the whole international society has come to this conclusion that the nuclear energy is the best option, for example, after the fossil fuels.
I don't think there's a full consensus. It is the case that the IAEA pursues that.
We have to break for the news, and we will return. Please hold your thoughts. A break for the news headlines in brief now. And when we return, what are the chances for fuller diplomatic relations between Iran and the United States, and what have been the stumbling blocks preventing such a breakthrough? Please stay with us on Press TV. Welcome back to Four Corners. The announcement by the National Intelligence Estimate, a grouping of 16 intelligence-gathering organizations in the United States, came as a surprise. It is also a blow to the hardline hawks led by Vice President Dick Cheney, who have consistently accused Iran of pursuing a nuclear weapons program and demanded a military action to curb Iran's progress. However, President Bush, speaking on Tuesday, admitted that Iran had a sovereign right to nuclear energy, but reiterated his belief that a credibility and trust gap existed, which needed to continue to be addressed via diplomatic means. Once again on Four Corners, we're joined by Kazem Gharib Abadi. And I did Mr. Gharib Abadi a disservice. Mr. Gharib Abadi is a current member of the negotiating teams negotiating on behalf of Iran and their nuclear program. We also have Kate Hudson in London, who is the chair of CND, and Kevin Saunders, who joins us in New York, and he is the former CNN science correspondent. If I can begin with you, Mr. Gharib Abadi, here in Tehran, what are the chances of a major diplomatic breakthrough between the United States and Iran, and how useful would that be?
No, I'll emphasize to find a solution regarding the nuclear issue was on diplomatic solutions. We always welcome the negotiations in this regard. So you know that from the August we have started a new phase of cooperation with the agency also. To resolve the outstanding remaining issues. These are the two paths that we are following. You know that Mr. Jalili, the Secretary of Supreme National Security Council, had its recent negotiations with Solana. So we believe, you know, that the Iranian nuclear issue was reported to the Security Council because some certain countries, they believe that the past history of the Iranian nuclear activities or program are not clear. So with starting the new phase with the agency, we are clearing the past. So the agency is able, according to the, its director general, is able to reconstruct the history of Iranian nuclear program and activities in the past. So we have solved three remaining issues, and only the three others have remained. So there is no necessity, for example, to stress and to emphasize in this regard to capture the case in the Security Council and to threaten and, for example, to push sanctions and also to push sanctions and resolutions in this regard. So we think that, and we invite the other side to follow up the way of the agency. They have to pay respect to the cooperation that the Islamic Republic of Iran is doing with the agency, and alongside the cooperation with the agency, we believe to negotiate with other parts, not only the EU3, every country that is interested, we are ready to negotiate. We have declared that we are ready to negotiate with every country except the Israeli regime. So this is also true in this regard. So there is no hindrance in this regard for negotiation. And also we stress our main position is negotiating the, in this case, not only the nuclear issue, we can negotiate regarding all fields. I mean the economic, the mutual cooperation, regional cooperation, international cooperation in every field. So the negotiation, we welcome the negotiation and we follow up this path alongside the cooperation with the agency.
Now, we spent an earlier part of today speaking with a number of experts in this field, and we were particularly interested to find out about the timing of the declassification of this intelligence report. I began with Richard Hellman, who is the director of Middle East Research, the Middle East Research Center, and I asked Mr. Hellman, what does the National Intelligence Estimate include, and why is it important?
From what I have read in the papers today, and without any independent confirmation of my own, it appears that there is a new national intelligence estimate in the United States, which indicates that the consensus of U.S. intelligence agency's opinion is that Iran has not been working full tilt at developing a nuclear capability since 2003. I stress that this is preliminary, so we must do some more research and analysis because, of course, in recent years and even back to the fall of the Soviet Union and the Berlin Wall, there were questions about U.S. intelligence estimates, so we must seek some confirmation and see if this is accurate. In any event, there still may be the problem of the incitement by the president of Iran and others there, the incitement to genocide by calling for the elimination of Israel and the Jewish people. So there may still be issues, but of course this does raise the prospect of an opportunity or an opening for the American people and the Iranian people to come to a better understanding.
I also spoke to Cameron Bukhari, who is the Director for Middle East Analysis at Strategic Forecasting Inc. in Washington, and asked him what the significance of the National Intelligence Estimate's findings were and why they have been declassified now.
The recent U.S. National Intelligence Estimate stating that Iran has halted its nuclear weapons program back in 2003 is an indicator that the United States and Iran are reaching some sort of an accommodation on Iraq. The main hurdle to any settlement on Iraq, and perhaps even more wider bilateral relationship, was the nuclear issue. And with the U.S. now saying that there is no evidence that the Iranians have been working on their nuclear weapons program since 2003, that facilitates such an understanding, such an accommodation, and we expect there to be a lot of progress in the days ahead. Obviously, the Arab states and the Israelis will be concerned, are concerned about the coming together of the United States and Iran, and we could see them getting upset and trying to, if you will, divert or subvert the process.
Kate Hudson, Iran has been calling on all countries around the world to disarm as a precursor to the building of trust. They call on Iran to offer trust. Which way does the equation actually work properly?
Well, we absolutely back nuclear disarmament by all countries around the world. We've been campaigning on that for 50 years next year. So that's the cause dear to our hearts. I think really one should try and build trust as part of the process of nuclear disarmament. I don't think we should say you have to have nuclear disarmament before you can build trust. I think the ongoing dialogue is the solution. If there is good faith, ongoing dialogue is the solution to all these issues. And I so strongly back what Harry Reid, the Democratic leader of the US Congress, said today when he talked of the need for a diplomatic surge. We've seen how disastrous the military surge has been in Iraq from the United States. Now let's see a diplomatic surge from the US towards Iran and towards all countries with which it has outstanding tensions. But if we begin that process of dialogue, then we can see proper resolution of these important issues.
But Kate Hudson, we've heard consistently, and I'm speaking to you from Iran, we've heard consistently from spokespersons for the Iranian government that they are prepared to sit down with anybody, excluding Israel for political reasons. They are prepared to sit down at a table with any government of the world and proceed with diplomatic negotiations, and indeed they have engaged. Why is it that the other side, as our guest here in Tehran puts it, have failed to bring as much good faith to the talks?
Well, I think that's the key question that we have to ask ourselves. I heard Mr. Bush very recently saying about the importance of isolating Iran. If a country is genuinely committed to resolving a problem, it doesn't talk about isolating the country with which it needs to be in dialogue. And of course, many people in the anti-war movement here in Britain believe that Mr. Bush has another agenda towards Iran and that the issue is not genuinely a concern about the development of nuclear weapons, because after all, the IAEA have been telling us for many years that there is no evidence of a nuclear weapons program in Iran. Now, we therefore have been able to make very unfortunate parallels. We hope they're not true, but parallels between what happened in Iraq and the recent situation towards Iran. With regard to Iraq, our own government here in Britain and in the United States made all kinds of allegations and charges against Iraq about possession of weapons of mass destruction. When the UN inspectors were on the verge of saying that there were no weapons there, they just wanted a little time longer to fully confirm that, they were disregarded and those countries went to war. Presumably, in our view, because they wanted regime change in Iraq and they wanted to get hold of Iraqi resources. In other words, they had an agenda other than a genuine disarmament agenda. And of course, as we know since the invasion and occupation of Iraq, there are no weapons of mass destruction there. So we very much hope that the United States is not pursuing some kind of similar agenda towards Iran. If they in good faith are concerned about nuclear weapons, they should now be satisfied.
Well, that's certainly that's the gist of what Harry Reid has been saying today. Kevin Saunders, I just want to turn to you.
I have to point out a very clear point here.
Yes.
The United States would like to do anything. It likes to be the dominant power over the world.
So how worried should Iran be?
But it cannot do anything that it wants or likes. For example, they wanted to pause or to suspend the Iranian nuclear activities. They wanted us to close the nuclear facilities. They referred the case to the Security Council. They also issued two sanction resolutions. They posed some sanctions against Iran. And also some officials and also the President of the United States, they threatened attacking Iran. But we see that none of these actions, I mean the actions in the security council and also the threats that are being made but by the U.S. officials,
they
cannot do anything that they want.
No,
so
I
Islamic Republic of Iran is pursuing its nuclear activities.
Mr. Khairabadi,
but
the Americans have form. The Americans have done this before. They've been down this path before. They went down the path, as Kate Hudson points out, of charging United Nations organizations to go and check out Iraq.
Yeah, Iran differs from Iraq. Iran differs from Afghanistan.
Perhaps
they were succeeding to attack Iraq. They were succeeded in attacking Afghanistan. But they are not successful now in Iraq and Afghanistan.
But every time Iran fails, Iran is a big country. To make a diplomatic case, and it has failed, it seems, in this case, to have made a diplomatic case. Every time the United States fails to make a diplomatic case, it ends this with war. So why should Iran be different?
Yeah, the United States is not in a position to have another military attack against another country, I mean Iran. It's not in a position. It has a lot of problems inside, and also a lot of problems in the Persian Gulf region, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and in other countries and in other regions. So we are sure that the United States of America is not in a position to have another military operation in another country.
Okay.
So they want or they would like to do that, but they don't have the potential and
they don't
have the resources and the feasible resources.
Fair enough.
We have to make a distinction between the threats and also the feasibility of doing the threats.
No, I hear that, sir. I want to ask Kevin Saunders. Kevin Saunders, I'm sure you remember the impact of the draconian measures that that impacted upon the Iraqi people, a number of UN resolutions that that were placed on them, the rate of under five deaths, I think, went up 20-fold, medicines were not allowed, flights in and out of the country were banned, and all of this had the effect of unweaving the social fabric of that country. The measures that are slated for this third sanctions resolution against Iran are not quite so draconian, but they do include flights, they do include medicines. What do you make of that?
I think that they'll be abandoned. I think that the entire landscape has been changed now very suddenly, unexpectedly, and in a way that raises possibilities for all sorts of initiatives that the whole world could and should welcome. For example, the United Nations, the Security Council, has been very reluctant to go along with some of the things that the United States wanted to do. Well, now that that pressure is off, I think there'll be a huge sigh of relief, and I think that the whole plan for sanctions will slowly fade away. More importantly, perhaps, in the long view, this has given Iran a unique historic opportunity to actually step forward and say, look, we would like to exemplify how people should behave if they're going to go ahead with nuclear power. And it seems, regrettably, that a number of nations will, even if it's only for 10, 20 years until something comes along that can offer an alternative, clean, safe, renewable energy. There will probably be many different alternatives that will come together. But given that there's tremendous pressure now to go ahead with nuclear power, in part because it should be remembered that the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, itself is to some extent a public relations arm of the nuclear industry. And so they're not going to do anything to stop it. And as a result of their influence, of course, the Non-Proliferation Treaty does include, and many regret it, does include an assurance that any nation that wants to have nuclear power should be allowed to have nuclear power. The result of this is that the International Atomic Energy Agency must now have renewed and enlarged power to observe, to study, to intrude and examine every aspect of the nuclear fuel cycle, from the mining of uranium to, and I won't say the disposal of atomic waste because they cannot be disposed, but the storage of atomic wastes. Mm. That entire nuclear fuel cycle needs to be under constant examination,
okay,
scrutiny, and intrusive inspections. And this is something that I would suggest the Iranian government is now in a unique position to step forward and say, we're going ahead with nuclear power, we understand the concerns, we understand the problems, and therefore we invite, nay, we insist that the IAEA, the world community, observes what we are doing in exactly the same way that we expect it to observe and scrutinize what every other nation is doing.
Qasem Gharibabadi, how transparent has the Iranian nuclear regime been so far? And how willing are the Iranian authorities to allow further transparency and complete intrusiveness in inspections?
I have to divide our cooperation and transparency measures with the IAEA in two phases. In the first phase, we did a lot in our cooperation with the IAEA. We suspended all uranium enrichment activities, all related uranium enrichment activities. We signed additional protocol. We implemented additional protocol voluntarily for more than 2.5 years. And also, more than 2,500 person day of inspections have been conducted over Iranian nuclear facilities. Even our military sites have been inspected by the agency. So these were the transparency measures that Iran has done. But it gained nothing. In the negotiations, they offered a package in August 2005. That Iran, we give reactors to Iran, we give fuel to Iran, we assure giving the fuel, nuclear fuel to Iran, and Iran should give up the native fuel cycle. So this is nonsense for Iran, really.
No,
we have cooperated with the agency. Now, at the second phase...
Can I just stop you before you start the second phase? I just want to ask you a question about that first phase. President Bush said today that nuclear energy is the sovereign right of each nation that is a signatory to the NPT. Now, he said that, and it's the first time I remember hearing him say that in those terms. But he said that there was a credibility and a trust gap between the world at large and Iran. How much justification is there to that statement, given the suspension of 2.5 years that you pointed to? And why is it that after 2.5 years of suspension, Iran decided to suspend its suspension, if you like, in 2005?
Yeah, we have recognizing of rights, and also we have another phrase, implementing the rights. We don't want, for example, Bush, the president of the U.S., or some other persons to recognize our rights. Our rights have been stipulated and recognized under the NPT. We are a member of the NPT. We want to implement the rights. The more important point is implementing the rights. If the Bush recognizes Iran's nuclear rights, so it shall also recognize the implementing of the rights. We want to implement our rights. What we are doing now is implementation of nuclear rights according to the NPT, because we have done our obligations, and we are doing our obligations according to the NPT and according to the IAEA statute and also to the safeguards agreement. All the nuclear activities in the Islamic Republic of Iran are being conducted under the strict surveillance and control of the agency. Now, we have declared and undeclared inspections, so there is no concern on behalf of the agency. Mr. Al-Baradi, in his report to the Board of Governors, repeatedly stated that there is no diversion from the nuclear activities to the non-peaceful purposes.
So now, look, we're rapidly running out of time, and there is one question that I have wanted to put to you all throughout the program, and I'd like to put that to you now, and we've got about 15 seconds each, if you would, please. I'll start with Kate Hudson. I'll go to Kevin Saunders, and I'll come to you last, sir. 15 seconds. Why has the National Intelligence Estimate decided to release, declassify this information now? Kate Hudson, go, please. 15 seconds.
I don't know what the reason is for the timing, but I think it's extremely welcome. I think it's very positive the way that the US Congress has responded to it, particularly Harry Reid, who's the leader there. And I hope that this will be an example to other countries around the world, and that the opportunities for full dialogue and diplomatic negotiations will now be genuinely taken up by all sides in good faith.
Excellent. Kevin Saunders in New York.
Well, I think that some serious grown-ups in the military and the intelligence communities decided that enough is enough. They are going to wrest back control of the American foreign policy apparatus from that small cluster of neocons who seized it when the Bush administration
came in. To which I have to constrain you. I do apologize. And Kazim Gharibabadi, the last word to you, sir.
I hope that they have come to the reasonable sense that they cannot involve the international community and the IAEA by their wrong intelligence reports.
Very good. Thank you for that. Very concise. And that was Four Corners. I'd like to thank each of the contributors to the program, particularly Kazim Gharib Abadi, Kate Hudson, and Kevin Saunders, who joined me live here in the studio, and of course you for watching. Please email us your thoughts, comments, and suggestions on Four Corners at presstv.ir. I've been your host, Shahab Mossavat, from Tehran. Goodbye.